to begin with a very brief scripture reading from Proverbs. It's from chapter 31, verse 8 and 9. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version, and this is the updated edition. Speak out for those who cannot speak, for the rights of the destitute. Speak out. Judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. May we add blessing and meaning to the reading of these words. I also have a second reading that I'd like to share. Someone you may be familiar with, George Orwell. You might know this little book that he came out with a few years ago called 1984. This is an excerpt from that. It was possible, no doubt, to imagine a society in which wealth, in the sense of personal possessions and luxuries, should be evenly distributed while power remained in the hands of a small privileged caste. But in practice, such a society could not long remain stable. For if leisure and security were enjoyed by all alike, the great masses of human beings who are normally stupefied by poverty would become literate and would learn to think for themselves. And once they had done this, they would sooner or later realize that the privileged minority had no function, and they would sweep it away. In the long run, a hierarchical society was only possible on the basis of poverty and ignorance.
Kurt Weill and Mark Lipstein, they were all writing songs at the early part of the 20th century, you know, for the labor movement. And this song has meant a lot to the people of Pennsylvania, and it still does mean a lot to the people of Pennsylvania. And when I was in New Jersey, I visited Bethlehem, and I saw the steel mills. This song means a lot to the people who were given promises during the industrial age in this country, especially in Pennsylvania.
Child had a
pretty good shot. Yes, he's as far as their old man got. But something happened on the way to that place. They threw an American flag in our face. Well, I'm living here in Allentown, and it's hard to keep a good man down. But I won't be getting up
about poverty today. If you haven't guessed, you probably haven't been listening very closely yet either. That being said, the title of my message this morning is Vote to End Poverty. So, there was a time in my life where I lacked, let's call it financial stability. But by my own estimation, even then, I was not poor. I mean, there were days when I didn't know how I would feed my kids. There were nights when I brought my children home to a dark house because the electricity had been cut off. During those times, my annual income did put me right on the margins of government-defined poverty line. But I wasn't poor, at least not by my estimation and understanding of poor. Now, flash forward just 8 years from now, 8 years after that, I am on a 3-day getaway to the North Carolina Outer Banks. I ate each meal at some of the best restaurants that the Outer Bank had to offer. One of them was this seafood place that was so fresh and so local that the names of the people who had caught that fish was right there next to the dishes on the menu. That is fresh. It also happens to be fairly expensive. I went on a sailboat ride on a 55-foot topsail schooner, and as the salty ocean spray bounced off the bow, I caught glimpses of the once nearly extinct osprey, and I scanned the horizon for dolphins. It wasn't really like I was wealthy. I was mostly there on an amazing Groupon deal that helped me afford to do everything, and part of that Groupon was this in-room massage. And as I laid in my private room at the bed and breakfast, where I was and enjoyed a tension-relieving rub-down from a professional masseuse, I contemplated what I'd say in a book that I had been asked to contribute to. My chapter was on poverty. I hope the irony of that makes you as uncomfortable as it made me at that point. As the masseuse gave a little extra attention to my right calf, I thought back to those evenings when I would pick up my kids from elementary school and then run faith errands right up until their bedtime, so that when we arrived home, I could tuck them straight into bed without having to flip on a light switch and thus revealing my inability to pay the bill. I thought about the evenings when, were it not for an intuitively timed bag of groceries left at my door by my mother, this then 30-something father would not have been able to feed his kids. Then I reminded myself that I was thinking of all these things while receiving an in-room massage at a quaint bed and breakfast. Talk about disparity. In less than a 10-year span, my life had moved from near poverty to being reasonably comfortable. The irony of writing a chapter on poverty from the place of comfort in my life rather than from the more uncomfortable place in my life when I was near the poverty line did not escape me. It set me to thinking a great deal about the relationship between being poor and having access to resources and influence and upward mobility. As I laid there at that padded table, I had two conflicting thoughts. The first thought was a person who can afford a 3-day getaway complete with a 55-foot topsail schooner ride should not assume to be an authoritative voice to any degree about poverty. The second thought was that I was actually on the poverty line. No one was really interested in my thoughts about poverty. The irony of poverty. During my financially difficult years, I was in divinity school. So, not surprisingly, I turned to the Bible to make sense of tough times. I came to the conclusion that I wasn't poor, I was just broke. I was by definition near the poverty line, but I wasn't poor. Basically, the poor, biblically, are those who are oppressed, that's in Deuteronomy. Those who are afflicted and lack justice in their lives, that's in Psalms. Those who are in need and are helpless with no access to power, that's in Isaiah. Those who are unable to support themselves, that's in Leviticus. Lots of other similar conditions. As I read about the poor in the Bible, a theme emerged. The poor are those who lack in some essential need that then put them in a place where they had little to no access to resources, influence, and upward mobility. And I would argue, therefore, lack in some basic human right. Now, for most of us, just the mention of human needs brings up the thoughts of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, with the essential foundation needs being psychological needs like shelter and water and food and clothing. But not surprisingly, either by knowledge or instinct, those are some of the very cues to which we look in order to understand what poverty is. So, based on the biblical perspectives that I just mentioned, I don't believe that lack of those basic needs are the true cues, the measuring sticks, by which we should try to understand poverty. When I could not feed my children without outside help, I can tell you, without any doubt or hesitation, I was not the poor of which the Bible was speaking. Lack of food did not point to my being impoverished. My personal reality, research, and reflection tell me that while those things can be reasons for poverty, lack of these most basic needs is more of a symptom of poverty. They are more indicative of poverty than causal. I could go through Maslow's list of basic human needs and speak directly to how lack of each of them can lead to poverty. But I think it's more important to recognize that there is a direct relationship between having certain human needs met, things like shelter, security of employment, health, family, friendship, respect, and having access to resources, influence, upward mobility. As I mentioned, Even during the difficult times in my life, I was not poor. I was in graduate school at Wake Forest University. I had access to education, respect, friends, family, health care, most likely security of employment. And because of the presence of those things, of these and other basic human needs, I didn't lack access to resources and influence and upward mobility. I just temporarily couldn't feed my kids without some help. And then, because of the presence of these things and other basic human needs in my life, 8 years later, I'm selling off the coast of North Carolina and eating chocolate-covered strawberries after my massage. That's why access to resources, influence, and upward mobility are such key elements in the consideration of poverty. Your life may fit the measurements of poverty, but if you have access to certain things, then you also have the means to move from that place, from a place that seems like measurable poverty, to a position where you can fulfill those basic human needs. The poor are denied that basic human right. The right to improve their lives without unnecessary obstacles. The right to realize justice, not just receive charity. The right to have a real reason to hope. Those of us with resources and influence and upward mobility have a responsibility to reshape society in a way that it provides those things for all people. It is a moral responsibility born out of love. And in this moment, at this time, the single biggest tool we have for making that happen is voting for candidates who will provide resources, influence, and upward mobility to as many people as possible. Speak out for those who cannot speak, for the rights of all the destitute. Speak out. Judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Well, now, Tamara and I, we have a wonderful house, and we have this wonderful little garden on the side yard of our house. She's basically turned even our front yard into this giant flower bed. It's like having an arboretum right outside your front door. Now, I said, she's done that to our front yard because I have what some people refer to as a black thumb. I can look at a plant wrong and it will die. She, on the other hand, has a degree in horticulture, and I have literally seen her bring what looks to me like a stick back to life. And I've learned quite a bit by watching her in our garden. And don't get me wrong, I still cannot keep a plant alive. But I've learned a few things. One of the things is that if you want to keep your garden doing well, you have to work diligently on it and frequently. And this is mostly because every time we turn around, there are weeds growing in our garden. Now, we can just grab them and pull them up, and pretty quickly it will look beautiful again. But what we leave behind, the root, will most certainly begin to grow again. Any gardener will tell you the trick to getting at the root of the problem, the trick is to get to the root of that problem. So, if there's enough for everyone in the world, but not everyone has enough, and given the fact that almost all great spiritual leaders tell us to do something about it, well, we really need to understand what the root of the problem of poverty is so that we can put an end to it. One of the great spiritual leaders was, of course, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was a voice crying out against racism and classism. Those were the battles of his time. And when you look at his theology, though, you see a larger picture emerging. He was interested in issues of justice. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Justice seeks to ensure that people are not hindered in pursuit of basic human needs. Biblical justice insists that we are all created equally in the image of God, and we are all to be given equal ground for living into the likeness of God that is uniquely in us, and anything that prevents us from lovingly pursuing it is counter to true justice. Dr. King was a voice that cried out for millions of people who were being prevented from living life as fully as they deserve. People who still cry out for justice today. In the U.S., Dr. King saw social, corporate, and political systems that were growing in ways which produced divisions much more than they produced equality. I don't think any of us are surprised by that. It turns out that systems designed by the powerful tend to ensure that they remain powerful. Be they unconquerable paperwork, uncalled for restrictions, unwarranted requirements, unchecked powers, or unjustifiable expenses, these systems place unnecessary mountains in front of people who are only trying to meet their basic human needs. In limiting people's ability to meet their basic human needs, the system, rather than solving the problem of poverty, actually promotes it. The systems that govern our nation, systems which claim to make the American dream accessible to everyone, and even systems intended to help those in need, have frequently become stumbling blocks for those who don't have access to resources, influence, and upward mobility. If those whom Jesus would call the least of these ever hope to overcome poverty, they must face insurmountable obstacles that are actually designed into the system. Those bureaucratic obstructions keep the poor in their place. They deny access to resources, influence, and upward mobility. That's not helpful. It's not even compassionate. Dr. King had this to say about it. True compassion is more than flinging a coin at the beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. The system is broken. In a nation that proclaims that it is self-evident that all people are created equal, our social, economic, and political systems seem to suggest that some people are created more equal than others. At the root of that reality is greed. Greed is not compatible with real justice. Greed is at the root of poverty. At the root of the problem of poverty in the U.S., vote against greed. Those of us with resources, influence, upward mobility, have a responsibility to reshape society in a way that it provides those things for all people. It is a moral responsibility born out of love. And in this moment, at this time, the single biggest tool that we have to make that happen is voting for candidates who will help provide resources and influence and upward mobility to as many people as possible. Speak out. Speak out for those who cannot speak, for the rights of the destitute. Speak out. Speak out. Judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. As Mother Teresa put it, it is a poverty to decide that a child must die so that you may live as you wish. Greed, the love of money and things, is the root of the weed we call poverty. We must vote against greed and against those who promote it. Service where we turn more inwardly. I invite you to join me for this prayer. As I've said time and time again, over the years, I've come to understand prayer differently and recognize it being different for each person. So feel free to echo these words in your head if that is where you are. If you just need a time to bow your head and meditate and breathe in and out, do so. Or grab a hold of the words that might lead you to the place you need right now today. Let's bow our heads together. It is easy to get so caught up in the business and troubles of our own lives that we forget we are called to be transformers for justice in this world. There is so much pain, so much loneliness, so much sickness, so much loss, so much injustice in this world that it can sometimes seem like just the way things are. May we never forget that creation contains the possibility of heaven on earth, a fellowship of humanity. May we never forget that the teachings of Jesus, as well as the teachings of so many other great spiritual leaders, can lead us to a world where suffering is greatly reduced. And until that time, may we not only be bold enough to confront injustices, but to comfort those who suffer, and to be open to receiving comfort when we are the ones suffering. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with one another and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may you share that love and happiness with each person in your life.